Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Elementary and secondary schools in our community can teach us a lot about the students who attend them. In some of them, what we learn can be pretty depressing. Our We Live Here project takes a closer look a bit later in this program. But first, as part of our summer series examining the state of higher education in our region, we'll look at one of the area's respected institutions of higher learning, Webster University, now celebrating its 100th year. Joining me in studio is Beth Strobel, the president of Webster. Beth, so nice to have you with us.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's a big year and it's a big time for Webster and St. Louis. Thank you.
Happy anniversary.
Oh, it's a good time.
What are you doing especially for the occasion?
Well, we only turn 100 once. it's probably a good thing. Uh-huh. So we have been celebrating since last September. We kicked off a year-long celebration downtown in the old post office arcade area, and we'll wrap it up this November back in Webster Groves.
Well, people might be wondering, what are you doing downtown when you're located in Webster Groves?
Well, we've been downtown for 41 years, so a long time ago, people who were pioneers at Webster, and there have been many of them, thought that downtown needed a presence and education right where people lived and worked.
How many students attend the downtown school?
Right now, 500, as we expand into the arcade building, which opens probably by January, we'll have capacity for 1,000.
So you're helping downtown St. Louis kind of reestablish itself, if you will.
Absolutely. As we look around the country, every major urban or metropolitan region has major anchor institutions downtown. It's almost always a major university, and Webster's proud to be part of that.
If you would, give me kind of a brief profile of the institution. I mean, you're all over the place, downtown, Webster, and far beyond that. And not everyone, I'm sure, knows how widespread your reach is.
I think that's true, and it's been part of Webster for a very long time. I'm starting year 7 at Webster, and I'm very fortunate to be at an institution that was so innovative and pioneering. So let's talk about students. 20,000 of them. About 6,000 of those students are here in the St. Louis area. So that means the rest are perhaps studying on military bases across the United States or in major metropolitan areas like San Antonio or Kansas City. And a number of those students, about 2,200 of them, are internationally located, Europe, Asia, and now Africa.
And those students in those foreign locations, are they Americans or are they nationals?
They're a mix.
They are.
You know, so if you went to our Vienna campus, probably 60 or 70 different nationalities, some Americans, some Austrians, some Asians, Middle Eastern, Africa, all across Europe. So it's a very globally diverse population.
How did all of that get started? That's quite different. Not every college and university does that sort of thing.
You're absolutely right. But Webster welcomed international students as early as 1919. Two young women from France who were here because of war relief efforts did their degrees right in Webster Groves and started that connection very early on. But it's really the 1970s that made the move.
And what was it about that particular time frame that caused it to accelerate?
You know, it was the innovation of a president and a community that always thought that teaching people to be global citizens was important. The trigger event. One faculty member spent some time in Geneva. He was on his sabbatical. He came back and he said, the United Nations is starting here. There's going to be a need for American education.
So what kind of programs are available to the students in those foreign locations?
Well, it depends on what the local need is. But you would find business programs, which are clearly globally oriented almost everywhere. But you would also find strong programs in international relations and communications and global communications and sometimes arts and sciences programs like psychology and counseling. So it fits the need of the region. And increasingly, we have partners even in places where we don't have campuses. And one of our newest is Havana, Cuba.
Wow, that must be brand new.
It is brand new. We had had a long-standing relationship there, but clearly the changing diplomatic landscape made it possible for us to sign an MOU with the University of Havana, and we actually have MA in International Relations students studying there right now as we speak.
So the Memorandum of Understanding, the MOU.
Yes, thank you.
Has been signed. And how long have students been taking courses?
You know, this is the first summer that we have students actually studying there. But we have been hosting faculty and experts from Cuba for a period of years and making visits ourselves. But now it's wonderful that our students can have that Cuban perspective and contribute to a worldview that makes the world a better place.
How difficult was it to set that up?
You know, fortunately, others, faculty leadership and administrators other than I, do that. But my experience tells me that these partnerships always start with one-to-one relationships.
Do you feel a special responsibility, given where we are now in this new era of U.S.-Cuban relations, now that you're establishing yourself there, a special responsibility on the part of the university in the way it acts and interacts and reacts to events?
I think that Webster's philosophy over the decades has been very solid. We don't see ourselves, to use negative characterizations about international work, as imperialists who are trying to shape the rest of the world to an American worldview. Neither do we see ourselves as missionaries. We see ourselves as knitting together the bonds of humanity across cultures, politics, geographies, and helping to build a world that knows each other and is more sensitive to each other's needs. And we're providing an American-style education that's tailored to meet the needs of that local population.
Of course, exactly what the State Department and the president wants as we associate more closely with the Cubans is not to proselytize necessarily, but the more that the Cubans become aware of us, the more they'll like us, the greater the ties will bind. So that's part of it.
And there's a great deal for us to learn from their life experience. Learning goes at least two ways, if not more.
One of your latest campuses, as I understand it, is Ghana?
Yes, Accra.
Accra.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about establishing that.
Well, Accra has a demand for higher education that the Ghanaian institutions cannot meet. They are at capacity. And in Accra and in Ghana as a country, there's a strong emerging economy. Many individuals who can do degree work in English, many multinational corporations that are located there to provide employment and internships, and strong democratic traditions and diplomatic relations between the two countries.
You also have a presence in Greece.
Yes.
And I'm curious as to, given what's been going on in Greece recently, how that impacts what you've been doing.
You know, the Greek economy, of course, is a topic of concern for all of us around the world. I think that we're closely monitoring it. Our provost and a number of our international reps were just in Athens this past week, and they said, contrary to much of the photo journalism that we saw, business is continuing as is. There's great tourist traffic, and for all foreseeable purposes, we think the future is strong for individuals who want to be part of an educational institution in Greece.
And the banks, as I understand it, there have just reopened, so that's a good sign.
Yes.
Let's bring it back to home.
Okay.
Tell me a little bit about your strongest programs at Webster University here.
I think that the strength of Webster University over its 100 years has been its resilience and its ability to adapt and evolve. So when I look at the most popular major for entering freshmen these days, it's interesting to know that it's biology, the most popular. And even the students we hosted for a summer camp last week, who are students that need a little bit of a head start to be ready for the academic year, a fourth of them aspire to a science major of some type. It's why we're building a new interdisciplinary science building, because we will contribute to this local and growing focus on plant sciences and STEAM, if you will, in ways by building out our capacity to prepare young people and working adults, frankly, to accept those jobs.
That's really encouraging to hear, because we've done so many programs here on this program talking about the difficulties in the STEM disciplines and in attracting students. And of course, it's well known how far behind we are in this country compared to other countries in those disciplines.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. And we believe, as an institution that is comprehensive, we do business and education and professional programs in the arts as well as humanities, that rounding out our portfolio with more science and technology is an important contribution.
You're getting along okay with Webster itself? I know there have been times when there have been zoning issues and things that Webster has wanted to do that is not always readily agreed to.
I am really proud to say that our relationship with the city of Webster Groves could not be more positive. That's why we're able to break ground for a science building.
Well, that is good news. When will that be completed?
We will officially start the construction in the spring. We will certainly schedule a groundbreaking this fall that will be more symbolic than earth-moving. So I don't know. A year or two depends on the weather, as you know.
All right. Well, that is a major factor. There's a couple of other things I want to talk to you about, but let's take a break before we do that so we don't have to interrupt it for the break. I'm talking with Beth Strobel, who is the president of Webster University. We're talking about that fine institution, both here and abroad, if you will. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send us a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Beth Strobel, the president of Webster University, in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. With the number of homicides in St. Louis surpassing 100 so far this year, a joint effort that includes the FBI, St. Louis Metropolitan Police, and county police is trying to reduce that violence. You may recall Chief Sam Dotson talking about the new task force last week on this program. Missouri State Senator Bob Dixon, on the steps of his Springfield home with about 100 supporters, has announced that he's running for governor. He joins a crowded field of Republicans seeking the nomination. And St. Louisans are waiting for Uber's next move after the Metropolitan Taxicab Commission announced last week it is open to alternatives to drug testing for the service's drivers. The main sticking point is whether Uber will comply with fingerprint-based criminal background checks. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to the conversation with Beth Strobel. Beth, one of the big problems obviously facing students today and their parents is the high cost of education, secondary education. Is Webster University in a position to be able to do anything to help the students and eliminate that $1 trillion-plus debt that is so heavy?
I think there's hardly any more public policy issue that's more important to talk about as a university president and to be strategic about as an institution like Webster. We were, after all, founded to be an institution that created opportunity where there was none. And it's important for our future and for this region's future that we stay true to that. So there are a number of very specific steps we have taken that we're already seeing make a difference.
And what are some of those steps?
One of those is to help give students a head start when they come in, if they are at risk at all of not being successful academically. Because after all, the worst thing would be to take on loans or indebtedness and then not complete the degree or not to complete it in a timely manner. So the students that I just celebrated last Saturday, 36 of them, who were accepted with some kind of condition, There's maybe something in their academic background that tells us that they will have a struggle if we don't give them a head start. We provide for free an intense residential summer experience, get them acclimated, build a community, do financial literacy training, do all we need to do to help them be successful academically and financially. We've been doing this for 5 years. In that 5 years, we have closed the gap of their success to 1% of the fully admitted students.
In terms of the cost of going to school
right.
at Webster, how does it stack up against some of the other institutions in this area or in general?
You know, I think that we're very middle of the road. I asked this morning, you know, what's the most typical price that we charge for an undergrad? And it's right at $25,000. We have moderated this. That's the tuition cost. We have moderated this considerably over the years I've been here. It used to be that every year you could crank it up. And we know the economy has changed and we're managing differently. Now, that's what the full price charge is. Like almost every institution in this region, we provide aid. So 97% of those students are getting institutional aid of some type. Grants, loans, scholarships, 94% of those, it's in the form of grants and scholarships and not primarily loans.
On the other side of the coin, I think it's well known that there is some dissension apparently among your adjunct professors who are seeking to unionize, and they lost that an attempt to do so this past year. Where does that stand now, and is that something that can be resolved without it's going much beyond where it is at this moment?
You know, I think we learned a great deal from that effort and the collective organizing effort. And clearly, the adjunct faculty, as well as the full-time faculty and staff, were not of one mind about this topic. There was a very free flow of information for and against, pros and cons. And the mode we're in right now, Don, is meeting with small groups of adjuncts, doing some formal focus groups this fall, improving our communication, trying to coordinate the ways we interact with adjuncts in more helpful and supportive ways. And clearly it's in the interests of Webster and our students for individuals who work for us to feel supported and applauded for the fine work they do.
Yeah. We have some calls starting to come in, and one relates to this very issue. So let's bring in Chris, who is calling from St. Louis. Chris, thanks for calling. You're on the air with Beth Strobel.
Thank you for having me. I actually have two questions, and they're related questions. One, I just dawned on me as President Strobel was commenting on the cost of tuition. And I wonder if I could ask that question first.
Go ahead.
Ask, why is it that tuition is so high when such a large percentage of teaching labor done on college campuses, particularly at Webster University, which I believe is in excess of 70% adjuncts? So where exactly is that tuition money going? And my second question is, I would like for President Strobel to respond to the recent RFT, Riverfront Times article on the Webster campaign and the national campaign for unionization for adjuncts, and in particular, the choice to hire Jason Greer, an anti-union consultant, to run the informational meetings with Webster's adjuncts, and to hire J.C. Hassman, the lawyer who specializes in union avoidance campaigns. Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
All right. Well, to start out with, clearly, very few students pay that full cost of $25,300. And a variety of institutional resources, including very generous support by donors, make it possible for students to have institutional aid that brings that price down to make the cost more affordable for them. What do most institutions need their budget for? They need it to support students. They need it clearly for employees, for facilities, for a variety of things. Whether that adds up enrollment-wise, to make it possible to employ more full-time individuals, to bring the pay and benefits for adjuncts to what they would wish and what we would wish, is always a matter year by year of smart decision-making. I will say that at the same time that we have hired adjuncts who bring incredible expertise to our students, we have also increased systematically the number of full-time faculty. So we're not doing a trade-off of adjuncts for full-timers in any way that's strategic. The Riverfront Times article, I did read it, and clearly not everyone will agree about the position that leadership took to provide more information and to hire experts that we hired to bring leadership and information base to the campaign. But many adjuncts did, and I appreciate the fact that not all of us will see eye to eye about who we hired or how we approached it.
How costly would it have been to the school, too, if that issue had passed?
Well, you know, the issue that would have passed would have given the right to negotiate a contract and have the union represent the adjuncts in a collective bargaining environment. Then it would have been a matter of what would the institution and the union have agreed to, and that takes time, and I don't think there was any clear sense of a price tag attached to that.
Would you have assumed that if it had passed and the negotiations had been resolved no matter which way, that you'd have had increased tuition?
Oh, well, that's an interesting question, and certainly when the leadership said we didn't think it was in the best interests of the institution, nor particularly the adjuncts themselves, to have indirect representation rather than to deal with us directly, that had to be part of the equation.
We have another call relating to money. Everything relates to money these days, Beth, doesn't it? Let's bring in Pat, who is calling from Webster. Go ahead, Pat. You're on the air with Beth Strobel.
Hi, Ms. Strobel. I wonder what your opinion was for having student fees that would help offset some of the tax base that's been eroded by Webster University buying out property around the university there. And similar to what Washington University and Fontbonne has with their students.
I'm not aware of how student fees help contribute to the tax base around Washington University and Fontbonne. So I'm sorry, Pat, that I can't speak about that. I will say that the property that we have purchased around campus that was residential, we continue to pay taxes to the city of Webster Groves for that. And similarly, we do provide direct support to the city of Webster Groves in the form of tuition scholarships for their employees that seek to get a degree at Webster, and any number of civic contributions we make, whether it's 4th of July parade or old Webster jazz and blues. We try to be good citizens, but I'm always open to new ideas for how we in the city can make Webster Groves a strong community.
Thanks for the call. Let's bring in Robert calling from Dogtown. Go ahead, Robert.
My question for Dr. Strobel is, you received, I believe as well as Mr. Schuster, received a bonus this year, even though Webster did not take in a profit. It's $12 million as a whole. So my question for you is, in light of the fact that you said that you want to make improvements for adjuncts, and many of them would like that to be something in the realm of a pay raise, they haven't had that in 7 years, would you be willing to rescind taking any bonuses in the future, considering the financial health of the university? And I'll take my answer off.
Go ahead.
I'm always open to ideas that make Webster a stronger community, and I made the decision today that I will start a second endowed scholarship directly for students and will contribute certainly a portion of that bonus to make that happen. Yeah. And the answer as to why are bonuses paid is more rightly asked of the Board of Trustees than an employee.
Well, while we're on the subject of money, and I don't want this to take a totally negative tone, but Webster University was fined recently by the Department of Education for a situation involving a campus in London, as I recall. What was that all about, and how has that been resolved?
You know, that has been resolved. We have a very favorable relationship with the U.S. Department of Education, and they found a matter in our contract with Regents University, and because of changes at Regents University that made it, in their view, an ineligible institution to award federal financial aid for degree-seeking students enrolled in our programs at Regents. So we needed to pay a fine. We have ended our relationship with Regents, and we're moving forward.
All right. That fine, I believe, is in the neighborhood of $95,000.
Yes.
Just for the record. Only a couple of minutes left. Let's move away from money issues for a moment. There's something that I wanted to ask you about because it's been getting some play recently in the media, and that is the Cyberspace Research Institute.
I'm so glad you asked.
Well, that sounds like it really, really perform a very valuable service in today's world.
I think it's another indicator of our seriousness about doing what the region and the country needs and putting more STEM programs in place. Our expertise here, both full-time and adjuncts, is very, very strong, and we'll add a research component to generate more knowledge about what our best practices to prevent the integrity of our personal data as well as our institutional data worldwide.
Tell me a little bit more about how this is structured.
Well, if an institution or an industry wishes to partner with us in the Institute, then they will have access to research that our colleagues have already conducted, and they will have a very secure place to test ways to prevent hacks and also to mitigate against those that happen. So it'll be real live testing in a protected environment that improves our knowledge.
Two other areas I'd like to get to, and we only have 2 minutes left. One is online education. This has to be an important factor in today's world, as long as we're talking the cyber world.
Yes.
How is Webster involved with online education?
I am so grateful to our faculty colleagues who in the 1990s embraced online education, first to meet the needs of the military. You can imagine if you're taking courses on a base and you're deployed and you want to keep your degree going, online's an option. But we have over 30 programs you can completely online, and a vast number of those who do this now are working mothers, and I'm glad we're helping them get the degrees they seek.
Is this where higher education is going?
I think more and more people will do some online, if not all online.
45 seconds left. The issue that we talk to everyone about in the college world today is security, particularly security for young women on campus. How are you structured for that?
We, a year ago, revised our policy to make it much stronger. We require every employee to be trained in sexual misconduct and security. And starting this fall, we will start training on a mandatory basis every student. We are very serious about safety and security.
All right. Going to have to end it on that note. Beth Strobel, thank you so much for being with us. Hope you enjoy the rest of your 100th anniversary year and enjoy your stay in Webster. I lived there for 30 years and love the community, and I'm sure you do too. Thank you for being
thank
with
you.
Us.
Thank you.
Beth Strobel, president of Webster University. When we come back, what schools tell us about the communities in which they serve. We Live Here reports in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.